Good morning. I know it's Friday. It's hard to settle down here, but I'd like to call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. A quorum is present, and by definition, the treats going around the table are healthy because they're from the Health Department. Lisa Timian brought those for us. So thank you, Lisa. And so the first order of business today is going to be approval of the minutes of April 18th. So do we have a motion? Representative Bierman.
Yes, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of April 18th.
Okay, is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of April 18th, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you. Okay, so we have are here for markup of the health budget and policy bill. And so we laid this over yesterday, so I'm going to move again that House File 4571 be re-referred to Ways and Means. And then I'm going to again move the DE2 amendment, which we were discussing yesterday. And so we are here to take amendments on the bill. So on our child size bill, right, members? since our bills are often 1,000 pages or more. So okay. So we have that before us, and I would like to start by moving the A240306 amendment, and this is a technical amendment, and I think I might ask staff to explain it because it it has to do with the recodification with the Children, Youth, and Families Agency and that recodification. So Ms. Sunderman.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the A24-03-06.
Madam Chair, excuse me.
Oh.
I can't find that amendment.
Oh, sorry, Representative Nadeau.
Just give me a second.
It's in the. It might be at the bottom of the packet, Ms. Niedernhofer says. It's got a different coding system, I think.
24-03-06.
Right.
Do you have any of the amendments? I did not have the packet of amendments in my packet. Do you have them at all?
Okay. No packet amendment. Okay, hold on a second here.
I sip my Jonathan's.
I
have
mine.
They weren't
in here.
That's
the
last
one. Oh,
thank you.
I have one also.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Take a death. Oxygen saturation.
Sorry. I should
have so many amendments. I got to pay attention. I'm not that bright.
Thank you.
Okay. So, all right. Everyone has the amendments now. Okay. So we're back on the A240306. Ms. Sunderman.
Madam Chair and members, this amendment was brought to us by the Revisor's Office. So earlier in session, Chapter 80 was signed into law recodifying statutes related to the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And because of that, there was some interaction of the new laws with these sections in the DHS OIG article of this bill. So these make the changes necessary related to the new laws. And they're not substantive. They're just making sure things are in the right place, essentially.
Okay. Any questions or discussion to that? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A24-0306, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Next, I would like to move the author's amendment, the A2. And this is has a few different things in it, as author's amendments usually do. Again, it's kind of a small one considering, but there are some technical assistance in here from agencies. There's an update to the AECOM bill, which if you have questions about that, this is the one about water systems or geothermal systems. Yep. And so there's an update to that based on, I understand, some more discussion with the stakeholders.
Yep.
And there's a change to an effective date here on the 988 fee, which was requested by industry just for ease of implementation. They wanted to set that out a little bit so they could be ready to implement. And it also deletes that provision that Representative Nadeau mentioned yesterday that was not tracked in the spreadsheet. So so we took out that language. So I think that's pretty much it. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Nadeau.
Is this the amendment, Madam Chair, that deals with the background study for anyone affiliated with the Head Start program for tribal children? Is that this one? Doesn't, I can't
Ms.
see
Sunderman,
it.
Doesn't you see direct it. Us here to that?
It removes the section. Yes, it does.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the deletion of Section 17 on page 283, I believe, is this deletion, and this was suggested by the department as a section that's no longer necessary.
Then. Right, thank you. Representative Doe?
Yes, so can you just, the language is deleting the necessity to have background checks on providers for children in a Head Start program that are indigenous, and the department is calling, is that outside of tribal lands? Is that across the board? Is that in Hennepin County, in the Head Start program with children, indigenous children that are in Head Start? Where does that apply?
So, Representative Doe, I don't know, is there somebody in the room from DHS who can come down and speak to this? I think that would be more appropriate. And Ms. Sunderman, could you just point it out to us in the amendment where we are?
Madam Chair, in the amendment, it's line 3.1.
3.1, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Madam Chair, Ari Didion, Acting Ledge Director for DHS OIG. That section is being deleted because it's no longer necessary because the appropriate language passed as a part of Chapter 80, the recodification bill for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So it's not removing the need for that. It's just already passed. We don't need it here.
Okay. Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You, Representative Doe. Good. Okay. Other questions or concerns about this? Okay. All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A2, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, next I'd like to take up the A1 amendment. I understand this is Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay.
The A1 amendment adds assisted living health care settings back to the summer health care internship program. This program pairs students with health care providers, helps students get exposure to health care careers, and involves providers in the community more. This is a paid program administered by the Hospital Association on behalf of the Department of Health and typically runs between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It includes hospitals, clinics, nursing facilities, home care providers, and adult day. Assisted living, because they are newly licensed within the last half decade, are just trying to get added to this list now because of that change in their licensure. And it is my understanding for the committee that the Department of Health is neutral on this change, and so I would ask for your support.
Okay. Discussion to the amendment. Any discussion? Representative Keel.
Madam Chair, I just would reinforce Lead Schumacher's amendment. I think this is an excellent program. I've watched it aides come from the nursing home to be able to learn what needs to happen in assisted living and how there's a little differences, nuances, because of my personal experience. And I think this would be really important for, as we go forward, assisted living is an important part of our services for those who need that service. So,
okay. Thank you, Representative Keelan. So I would, this is an existing program. I think it makes sense. I would recommend that members support this amendment. And before we vote on it, too, I forgot to mention at the outset that Representative Carroll has been approved to vote remotely. So, so he's joining us today remotely as well. So, and Representative Bierman has him on the phone here. And we did that one time before. I think it was Representative Quam who was last doing the remote voting procedure. So just so everyone knows. So with that, any final word, Representative Schumacher?
No, thank you.
Okay. So all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Let's go to the A6 amendment. This is this was actually a bill on a bill brought to us by Representative Hewitt, but Representative Bierman, I understand you wanted to move the A6.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the A6. And this is an amendment that just states that a mortician must be present for acceptance of a dead human body for final disposition for the natural organic reduction. And we do have Representative Hewitt here if there are any other further questions.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Okay, not seeing any. So with that then, all in favor of adoption of the A6 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Next, I'd like to go to the A3 amendment. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bonner is moving the A3 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is my intent to move the A3 amendment. So overall, this amendment narrows the scope of the bill while retaining meaningful gains for patients and doctors, reducing processing burdens, and streamlining PA for patients and clinics, and overall retaining the original intent and reform. On the overuse of prior authorization that can lead to delayed care and adverse outcomes that hurt patients. Specifically, it does a couple of minor things. It incorporates some amendments from Ms. Clarkvist and Mr. Chung drafted around MAPs for service, deletes the generic drugs and biosimilars at this time, limits the prohibitions on buprenorphine. The generic for Suboxone, sorry, having issues this morning, okay, no longer prohibits prior auth and most medications, but instead requires that the prior auth be handled according to the expedited rules within 48 hours, prohibits prior auth for medications that treat stage 4 metastatic cancer based on current Minnesota statute 62Q.73, it removes the section on value-based contracts. And finally, it reduces the amount of data required that companies must report annually to MDH and thus, of course, fiscal cost.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Discussion to the A3. All right. Seeing no discussion. All in favor of adoption of the A3, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 is adopted. People must want to go home. Okay, let's turn to the A15 amendment. Representative Herr. Representative Herr, did you want to move the A15?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A15.
Okay, so moved, and please to your amendment.
Yes, this amendment is actually clarification language to provide labeling for flavored cannabis. This is language that was worked with by advocates, Department of Health, and also dispensaries. And so this is the agreed language between the different groups on consistent labeling for the industry.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion to the A15 amendment? Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, you'll all be shocked to know this is not something I know a ton about. But my question is, so there are strains that have these names. Do these strains have those flavors? Like, does it taste? I don't know. Anybody in the room maybe know? Like, does it taste like pineapple? Like, I mean, GMO is amazing, right? I'm a fan, actually.
Representative Herr.
Chair Liebling, Representative Brindley, I do not know the taste, but I do know that these are natural terpenes that are actually part of the plant, and it's specific strains that have like citrus or certain flavors in it. I don't know the potency of the taste of it, but I do know that it's important to the industry that these strains remain protected. So,
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I trust that you know nothing about it. But I would just point out that this is indicative of the complexity of this issue. And, you know, I mean, while we're doing a flavor ban, as it turns out, when you modify things, you can just make it taste like that. And so is it a flavor ban? Are we just picking in winners and losers with this? That's very interesting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this this would be analogous to is hops. So my favorite hop is called Citra, and brewers make a beer, an IPAs out of it. And my favorite one is called Fresh Squeeze from Deschutes Brewery. And so I think it's the same kind of a thing. It's just the bud or the hop just naturally it's been bred to have a citrusy flavor.
I don't understand those things either. I don't understand those things either.
So if we, I have a feeling we're going to lose control of the committee here. Okay. Maybe it was the treats. I don't know. And Representative Herr.
Chair Lely, I was just going to mention that I think that, you know, the purpose of the flavor ban is not to pick winners and losers, but really to say that when something is artificial, that it is, I've talked to a lot of industry experts, dispensaries, to growers, and that they are actually for the ban specifically because we don't know the artificial, the carcinogens within those or the long-term impact of having artificials, but terpenes are natural to the plant and grown within the plant, and we know that those are much safer, and so I think that this is really important to allow those flavors because it is naturally occurring. So, again, this is not about choosing winners and losers, but it's about really looking at protecting people's health and what would be still enjoyable but better for them.
Thank you, Representative Herr. And then as I look at this, too, that the issue about the labeling, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the idea here is that you want to label it so people know, but not be like fruit flavor, like, you know, like to attract children, right? Is that kind of accurate?
That's exactly right, Chair Liebling.
Thank you. Okay. Any other discussion to the A15? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A15, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Let's go to the A16. Representative Bierman, I believe this is one of yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A16. It is simply a change of the effective date.
This was community benefit.
Community benefit, yes, assessment, and at the request of the hospital organizations.
Okay. Any discussion to the A16? All right, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A16, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Another Bierman amendment, this would be the A4, and I think this one is also on behalf of Representative Hewitt, who I don't think is still here, but it's fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A4. This is the requirement that the Deputy Director of Medical Services must be a physician, and that's all.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bierman. And my understanding is that this one is also to line up with the other bill that we moved out yesterday, correct?
Exactly, correct.
All right. Any discussion to the A4? All right, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The A8 amendment, Representative is not here. We'll wait on that. So we'll go to the A9 amendment, which is my amendment. So the A9 is doing some kind of what I would call maybe cleanup isn't exactly the right word, maybe reconfiguring of some work we did last session that was in our bill that directed the Department of Human Services to do an implementation plan for a direct payment system. So as everybody knows, I'm very interested in finding alternatives to our current PMAP system where we use private entities to deliver our public program. And to my way of thinking, we have very little oversight over them. And I believe that it is time to explore other ways of doing this, providing better care at possibly lower cost for our approximately 1.4 million Minnesotans who are on our public program. So you may remember that earlier in the session here, we heard an amendment that I was trying to move the date for delivery of this plan up a year. And I knew that the department would have something to say about that, and indeed they did, and so we've had some discussions. I'm not representing that the department is 100% good with what I've got here, but a lot of this is a result of work with them, and the work will continue. But what this does, instead of just having them deliver one plan for a certain kind of way of doing our public programs, it has them do three alternative plans, at least three. And so they seem to be interested in doing that. So it essentially has the department help us figure out what options there might be for a way forward. So I have to say, even though this is a study, and of course, you know, we tend to laugh a little bit about studies, kind of studies are what you do here when you can't get something done, you do a study. But in this case, you know, this is a big deal. Our public programs, we spend a lot of money on them. They impact a lot of people's lives and very important for our state. And of course, we know that our healthcare industry is a huge industry in our state. So this is big stuff. And I'm really excited that the department is interested in working with me and with us on finding, really exploring better ways to do our public program. So that's what you have in front of you, members. So I would ask for your support and be happy to take questions. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking at just a couple of changes to the language. I appreciate the acknowledgement on 1.15 that this is dealing with where the financial risk is, that I think that was an interesting part of the conversation that came out of, I think that hearing was in December. Was that when that was?
Yes, a long time ago.
It was a while ago, although it feels like just yesterday. I also appreciate I see throughout it's in several places talking about supplemental payments, changing that to care coordination. I think that that really has to be a critical piece. I think one of the important things we learned was that part of the problem we have in fee-for-service systems is that they are lacking in that care coordination. So I appreciate that change. Now, this is just a study. And do we know? I apologize. I have not had time to totally digest the whole thing. It looks like the changes that have been made really are just in the direction. It doesn't look terribly substantive. Is there anything more substantive that I am missing in this?
Well, Representative New Brindley, I guess I kind of think it is substantive, but I mean, it's just semantics, right? I mean, it's a change in the direction of what they will be looking at.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, there's no funding attached because we funded it last year.
Yeah. Okay.
So it hasn't happened yet. And by the way, the date has been put back to the original date. So just to flag that, you know, I originally tried to make it happen earlier, and they just told me they just don't have the capacity, and that, you know, they may need – this is a big deal, so they need time to do it. And that makes sense to me, too. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to make sure I understand, the county-administered MA plan on the spreadsheet, there's funding for that. Is that – that's not this, then? That's a different provision.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure I'm understanding where that
yes.
money is attached to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
You.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Representative New Brindley, because that's a different thing. That was Representative Fisher's bill. That's in there. There's funding for that, and that's on a quicker timeline.
Okay.
And they're working with the counties on that, and there is an intersection to this, because we're all talking about our public programs, but yes, that's separate.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. So any other discussion? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A9, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. And the amendment is adopted. All right, well, so, hold on a second. Okay, let's go to the A14 amendment. Representative Nadeau, I think. Is that yours?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Did you want to offer that?
Yes. Thank you. I want to start by putting everyone at ease that my intent is to introduce this and withdraw it. You know, after hearing testimony on these measures in Article 4, Sections 35 to 37, it raises some concerns, and I think the legislature needs to be cautious about picking sides in negotiations and giving one side more leverage than the other. Large providers, hospitals in particular, already leverage these negotiations. There's Gillette's and Hennepin Healthcare, and they're tremendous providers who offer an incredible service to our state. But when I looked at the current law, the statute already requires health plans to contract with essential community providers and sets a payment floor for these providers to the same and similar services. Anything above that floor is negotiated, as it should be. In Section 36, it's not clear if the amendment is looking to clarify the floor or to raise it. And I think they're trying to raise it. And if that's the case, I'm concerned about the legislature inserting itself into these negotiations to raise what patients must pay for care. When a provider is requested a given reimbursement rate, they're telling an insurance company that this is what a patient must pay for services. The role of insurance is to negotiate these rates with providers so patients pay what's reasonable for their care and they're not overpaying. If insurers are removed from having the ability to negotiate these rates, premiums and out-of-pocket expenses they have to go up. And we already hear health insurance and the cost of care is too expensive. The law already states that plans need to contract with these providers, and this bill seems to take it a step further and say that they need to pay more than their peers. If providers are concerned about reimbursement, it seems like this should be handled in contract negotiations and not state law. Thank you for giving me the chance to express my concerns on this, and I withdraw this amendment.
All right, the A14 is withdrawn. Okay, let's go to the A10. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A10 amendment.
Okay, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually offering this amendment on behalf of Representative Zalesnikar. We talked about these issues last year as well. We did pass legislation to allow a support person, to guarantee the right of a support person during labor and delivery. And we tried lots of different ways to expand that to make sure to ensure that everyone had that right to a support person. And I know Representative Zalesnikar spoke with you, Madam Chair, and she worked hard to ensure that the concerns that you had with the bill were removed, were fixed, and she also worked closely with DHS and the ombudsman to get this language something that we can be more comfortable with. So essentially, it is that same language, right? That would ensure that someone in a patient in a facility, a hospital, non-acute care facility, nursing home, et cetera, would have that right to a support person while receiving care. And I'll just add my own, personal experience and how difficult it would have been had this been denied. Clearly when my husband was ill, he had multiple, frankly, weeks-long stays in the intensive care unit. And during that time, part of the ALS process is that your muscles stop working, right? Your brain stops talking to your muscles. That's essentially what it does. So you become paralyzed. And part of that, of course, is your tongue. And you can't speak very well. And frankly, I have 5 children. One of my daughters and I were pretty much the only people who could interpret my husband's speaking. And so when he was in the hospital, I was there 24 hours a day. I slept there. I was there the whole time. And not only was I able to help interpret his needs for the care staff, I was an additional care person, right? When he needed something, we didn't call the nurses most of the time. I was helping provide that one-to-one care. And of course, not to mention the really tragic stories that we are all aware of, right? Of folks really, really tragic circumstances. So again, she worked closely with DHS and the ombudsman to ensure that this language could be workable. Clearly we all understood the need when it came to labor and delivery, but I think it applies to so much more. So hopefully hopefully the work has been done at this point to include this language to make sure that everyone has that same right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other discussion to the amendment, the A10. All right. Well, I did have some discussion with Representative Zalesnikar, and I have to say I don't think it's a bad idea. Certainly, we all understand that There are many times when you, if you're under some kind of medical care, either in a hospital or other place, that you need support. And, you know, we also understand that we've just been through a, you know, once in 100 years pandemic. And, of course, I didn't look this up before I came to committee, but I think our country lost over 1 million people to the pandemic. I mean, we have been through a really a very difficult time. And I think that there was, you know, everybody scrambled to try to meet the moment and try to protect people. And sometimes that probably did go a little bit more extreme than it needed to. And there were many tragic stories of people who were denied comfort when they really should have had it. Or in retrospect, it's easy to say that, right? But as I look at this amendment, I really think it's not ready for prime time. I think if, you know, I still see a lot of problems in it. And I think it also possibly has a cost, which would not be accounted for. In particular, you know, we have a state cost to direct care and treatment that has a lot of facilities that would have to implement this. And I just, at this point, think it's, there's a lot here. There's a lot to unpack. I mean, I think this, you know, if it had been brought earlier in the session in its current form, we might have had a hearing on it and probably would need kind of an extensive hearing because there is a lot here. It definitely needs work. So I guess I would ask members to vote no at this time. I think I would really encourage you or another member to bring a version of this next session and really work it through with everybody because, you know, there are some things. Oh, the other thing I did want to mention, too, I believe this would have to go to judiciary because it talks about liability for facilities. And I mean, I could, if you know, if we want to take a lot of time, I could kind of go through and all the things I flagged just in one reading that are possibly problematic. So I'm not ready to accept this at this point. But again, I appreciate your bringing it. I appreciate that we all kind of share the concern about this happening to people. But I don't think this amendment gets us where we need to go. Other discussion? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, frankly, I mean, I appreciate the concern about the state cost for DCT. You know, frankly, we did have this language has not changed a ton, but we have worked really hard over the last 2 years to accommodate the concerns that we've been given. And so it's enormously frustrating to then just be told very generically, well, I just don't think it works. It's just not ready for prime time. This language has been introduced as a bill, and it hasn't gotten a hearing. And I know a hearing was requested. And so you can imagine that it's very frustrating to be told in very generic terms, well, we're concerned it just doesn't work. I hope, Madam Chair, that you will have a more serious conversation about that. And that, well, I mean, yeah, it just, this has been put off. We did this as an amendment in committee last year. It was done on the floor last year. It was a bill last year that had a hearing requested. And so to say that, yeah, we all sort of agree that this kind of makes sense, that there are some things that are problematic, it feels really dishonest. It feels really dishonest that we're put off with still just generic, general, well, it just doesn't work. It's incredibly frustrating, especially, I mean, like I said, this year, Representative Zeleznikar has done the work. She has really done the work to try to get this right. And it's unfortunate that she is not being given more respect than that.
Well, Representative Brindley, I think it is really disrespectful to you to accuse me of dishonesty. I have notes all over this about all the problems with it. And in fact, the bill that was introduced came rather late. I didn't look it up to remember, but it came rather late. The one that was originally introduced that Representative Zalesnikar spoke to me about was actually a Davis bill that had a bunch of problems, that was all that had echoes of vaccine denial and all kinds of stuff that I was not going to take up in this committee. And I told her that. And, yeah, it took a long time to actually get to a bill that she wanted to be heard. But if you just want one specific, and I don't want to waste a lot of time on this, but if you just go to line 3.29, liability of facility, you know, it's saying that it's giving facilities some kind of immunity, including for failing to protect or ensure the safety or comfort of a support person. I mean, this is getting into legal issues that would have to go to judiciary. So there's one very specific reason why I'm going to ask for a no vote. So I think we've had enough discussion on it. So, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too am disappointed. I really think this is something that should have been worked on. COVID brought it to the forefront, but this was happening before. I've had experiences with challenges representing somebody, being with them, as Representative Brindley talked about her husband, the fact that there are people that should be, and I would never say a spouse or specifically somebody, because I've been a care provider for family members that my husband's aunt. I wasn't technically related, but she was capable initially in one hospital of requesting that I be there. That wasn't the case in other hospitals, so she couldn't talk, and that became a challenge. But I think this is, I understand the hospital's challenges with this and their concerns, but I believe in my personal experience with many people that I've worked with, we can be more helpful for the medical profession than harmful in being there to advocate for a patient. And I do see a lot of exceptions, that protect the hospital or protect some of the other issues. While I can understand that it might need to go to judiciary for the liability of the facility, I really think it's really unfortunate that we are not doing this, because like I said, COVID brought it out that it was a bigger problem than we realized. This was happening long before. It's just the public is more aware of it now, that there are times when you can't be, or whoever is in charge doesn't want you to be in the room. And sometimes with good reason. I understand that. But just really disappointed that we're not talking about this seriously and putting it in the bill. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the, so I would ask members for a no vote. All in favor of adoption of the A10, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Okay, let's go to the A13 amendment. That I think that is Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do move the A13.
All right. The A13 is before us to your amendment.
So the last thing that we should be doing in this committee or in the state is reducing rates to providers regardless of the service provided. Last year's mental health services were increased by 3%, and that's awesome. But at the same time, we began the phase-out that was put in place for the rate add-on for critical access mental health services that started in 2006. My amendment merely pushes out the start date by one year, allowing providers to have that small delay and a softer landing that's going to minimize the impact between phasing out a 23.7% rate add-on and the 3% increase. And for critical access mental health providers, this reduction is going to be a cut of 9.6% to their overall rate January 1st of 2025. So, I mean, if we don't take this action, outpatient mental health rates are going to be cut on the 1st. And we can direct DHS to find $2.9 million to minimize the impact that this is going to have on providers, and we can come back next year and work on utilization and fix rates system-wide. And I know that when we had the rate study that came out just before session, I think a lot of us were surprised, some of us weren't surprised, by how these rates have lagged for so long. And I recognize, Madam Chair, that we don't have the money to do a lot of the things that we want to do. And I have always been a huge proponent of trying to ensure that we have reimbursement rates that allow our providers to function as a business to ensure that they're providing services across the board. So that's my amendment. It's extending that date out, and I would ask that people support this motion.
Discussion to the A13. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nadeau, I appreciate you taking a look at this and trying to figure out where do we need to focus on it. And one of the problems that we're having right now is trying to figure out, because of the lack of fiscal notes coming through, is what are the costs of a variety of different things. There are many things that we had talked about in my committee about areas that need to be addressed in the mental health continuum. And one of the frustrations that we had is that we did not have all the information. We're still waiting for the information to figure out what are the actual costs and where can we put the best use of money. I'm not saying this isn't, but there may be others that are just as critical. And I'd rather prefer us not taking this up right now. We've got some dollars that are set off to the side that we're trying to figure out the best places to put that will give us the best bang for the money. And I'm not saying this may not, this could be possibly where it's the best bang, but it may not be. And this is one of the things I'd ask for, a little bit more patience on it, and that we not take this right now so that we can continue the work that will be going into conference committee to figure out the best way to make the best uses of the very limited dollars that we have.
Yeah, thank you. Other discussion to this? All right, so I would just say, I would ask members to vote no on this. From my understanding, it is out of balance, and I understand, Representative Nadeau, you're trying to just help with that first-year problem and push the problem off a little more. I get that, but, but it is out of balance, my understanding, as it is here. And also where it gets its funding is kind of not acceptable, too. In our current bill, we've designated over half of the funding that we've been able to find to mental health. And so I would join with Representative Fisher in saying, you can give us a little more patience. We're gonna do our very best. I mean, we recognize the issue, and we all just have so many tools, and so we're trying to work with what we have. So final word, Representative. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I did have my hand up. I would just say, I mean, this bill, and as we talked about yesterday, is significantly out of balance already. And frankly, the one thing that we hear about across the board is mental health. And this right now is a cut to mental health. And so, I mean, when we're talking about prioritizing mental health, this is specific to critical access. This is going to have really significant impact on our critical access mental health capabilities. So I would encourage folks to include this. The bill is out of balance already. It's going to have to be dealt with in ways and means already. This is probably one of the most critical pieces that should be in that mix. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do know, and thank you, Representative Fisher, I do know that we're going to work on this, and I know that we're going to try to figure out where the best landing spot for, this money is. And with that being said, this is a reduction currently. We took a little bit of money last year from this rate add-on to pay for that 3%, and I understand how and why. I just believe that this cut at this time is the wrong thing. This is $2.9 million, and DHS can absorb these dollars. I talked with Mr. Harney a couple of days ago about some of the, we're putting in some mandates for certain coverages. It was Representative Hemmingson-Yeager's bill, Representative Stevenson's bill. And I asked about the costs that were in the fiscal notes and how those were apportioned, because they didn't have a cost in our spreadsheets. And those costs are basically carried because they're individuals in the CGIP program, and they're basically carried because those are paid through intergovernmental funds. This is $2.9 million that DHS can come up with. And this is a cut, and this would be my last word, and I get it, this is math, but members, we should vote yes on this amendment today. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, all in favor of adoption of the A13 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Let's go to the A8, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A8 amendment is part of the Minnesota Debt Fairness Act pertaining to medical debt. And this section, as written, is incomplete. It stops after it currently reads medical debt does not include debt charged to a credit card. We know that there are credit cards that are specifically designed for medical debt, like care credit, and so we want to extend it to that. And this amendment here today makes it consistent with the bill that passed through Commerce off the floor. Thank you.
All right. Discussion to the A8. All right, seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A8, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A8 is adopted. And Representative Ryer wanted to move the A17.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A17 relates to the rates that can be charged to providers or that providers can receive under contract. And it's the inspiration for it came from the staff model amendment that Chair Liebling passed previously this past week. In this case, this pertains to a company where one company owns both the HMO and the provider groups, and ensuring that within that structure, the HMO cannot differentiate and advantage the providers that are owned by the same company. So that's the essence of this bill, this amendment.
Okay, discussion to the A17. Discussion to the A17. All right, Representative Nadeau.
So, and thank you, Representative Ryer. Can you tell me which managed care plans you think that this would impact in Minnesota?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Many of the large companies, Aetna, for example, which is owned by CVS and owns many provider groups, perhaps not in Minnesota. I haven't checked that. United Health Group has 90,000 plus physicians in their employ through Optum. And so if they have not yet acquired medical groups in Minnesota, this would avert a problem that has led in other places to cost and access issues.
Representative Nadeau.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not going to regurgitate the conversation we had on the bill the other day, but I worry again, you know, when we kind of are beginning to insert ourselves into those business relationships that exist between payers and providers, ultimately, I think I recognize what you're trying to do, and that's balance the scales, making sure that, you know, that there's not some preferential, you know, providers being paid, you know, extremely high rates when other providers are not, that may or may not be employees of that integrated system. But I will reiterate that there is value in value-based payments. There is value in business models that work in some geographies versus the other, and there's differences. The cost of care, for example, in St. Louis County, I just picked that as an example, versus Hennepin County, are different. The access is different. The needs are different. How the plans and payers work with providers is different. And I worry when we begin to get so prescriptive in legislating that we're trying to take some of that innovation that may happen. And I'm not saying the healthcare system is by any means, I'm not. But it's what we have, and I think we have to try to preserve and focus on, you know, what is good and what is innovative, rather than focusing on, you know, having a preference in, we really want to balance the scales, because sometimes that balance comes with inefficiencies and care and decreases in access of care. So thank you for bringing it, but I'm still very worried about when we do these things. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but I just wanted to get it out, kind of out there on the record. But if the compensation from the payer to provider is partially based on a base rate and partially based on quality-based value payments, that this amendment would not interfere with that as long as the base rates are treated equitably, and the application of the valuation-based payments are also treated in an even-handed manner.
Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Elkins. That is correct.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. All right. Other discussion? All right. I think we're ready to vote. So all in favor of adoption of the A-17 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And we will go to the A-19. And that, I think, is Representative Nadeau.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Which one?
The A-19.
The A-19. Thank you, and I do move the A-19.
To your amendment.
Madam Chair, this is, and members, this is a bit of a sledgehammer. And it, as it completely eliminates the proposed changes in the underlying amendment for prior authorizations. I think it's important to remember that prior authorizations are all about payment. They're not about service delivery. When a health plan denies a prior authorization, it means that the plan disagrees with what the provider wants to do, and they're not going to pay them for it. The provider can still provide those services. There's nothing a health plan can do to stop them. If they believe they're right, then provide the service, and it's because this is about, and I know I get in trouble when I say this, but this is about money. This is about payments, and it puts patients in the middle. And we have to be very, very careful, in my opinion, when we do this. And I want to remind people that emergency services are excluded, and I think there was an amendment that tried to expand, and maybe you expanded it, Representative Bonner. So before I get into what I think is the gist of why I hope you will vote for this amendment, I just want to remind people what this is. I mean, in 2020, we made some major changes in our prior authorizations. Medicaid was exempted. We changed the timeline for standard, you know, review. It has to be completed from 10 days to 5. Situations where a provider requested an expedited review, that timeline changed from 72 hours to 48 hours. It includes one business day. We changed the timeline for an appeal from 30 days to 15. Expedited appeals remained at no more than 72 hours. Medical reviews are performed in this case by unrestricted Minnesota medical license holders with same similar medical specialty that typically treats the conditions being requested. There's ideas out there that there's this group of administrative people like me that are out there denying, you know, services, and that's just not the case. Drug reviews are by a licensed pharmacist or a physician competent to evaluate the specific treatments that are being prescribed. Further, a health plan company must post on its public website prior authorization requirements. Their utilization review organization must submit the organization's current prior requirements and restrictions. They're prohibited from charging from changing a prior authorization criteria during a plan year unless there's extreme circumstances. They need to comply with a prior authorization approved from another plan. If the enrollee changes carriers during a plan year. So there was a ton of really good work that got put in place in 2020, and it's working. And if you go onto any of these plans, you can literally identify, you can look at prior authorization lookups, the commercial, the Medicare Advantage. I just pulled up one. It's Platinum Blue. There's every one of these things you can go down and you can look. You can actually, there's so much information that's right here and it's available right now. I think we need transparency. We need oversight. We need that checks and balances that the prior auth, provides. The reason that the biggest reason, and if it's not enough for that, I think that the biggest reason that we have to look at this is that the changes in this bill are going to cost the state an enormous amount of money, and so this doesn't have a fiscal note. We learned yesterday, and so I had to try to do whatever I could to try to figure out what is the cost to the state going to be, and back in 2020. I found a fiscal note worksheet from 2020 for Senate File 3204, I'm happy to send it to anybody, that identifies the cost for PA to the CGIP fund. The note estimates the cost to CGIP for fiscal year 23 was $19,336,000. I don't know the exact numbers of CGIP members, but I've heard it anywhere from 130,000 to 150,000 members. So simple math is if we take $19,336 divided by 130,000, I took the low end, I took the conservative numbers, divided by 130,000 members, we have a cost of $148.74 per member per year, $150 per member per year. Now, we simply have to extrapolate that cost into our public programs. And today, the chair, I used 1.3 million members, but Chair Liebling today said it's 1.4. So if we take $148.74 times 1.3 million people, it's $193,360,000. $200 million is what this is going to cost. So we can't make promises that we can't keep with money that we don't have. I don't remember who said that, but I really like it. Doubt? Was that a doubt thing?
No, don't say that.
No. Oh, sorry. Sorry. I don't remember. So, members and Madam Chair, I know that there's a fiscal note coming. I am, if I'm wrong by 75%, this is going to cost $50 million. $50 million. You can't vote for this. You can't. I mean, we just voted down $2.9 million, and this is $200 million. And you guys know me. I don't get worked up that much, and I'm really not worked up now. But, members, there is a fiscal cost to this, and anyone that says that there isn't is not telling you the truth. And this is $200 million that is going to be that we're going to have to pay at some point, and I don't know where the money's coming from. So, members, this one, hopefully, I know it's not a friendly amendment; it's a sledgehammer amendment. But we can't afford this to remain in the bill. So my amendment is very simple. It strikes everything. It strikes the prior authorization changes out of the bill. So thank you, Madam Chair.
So I'm going to go to Representative Bonner in a second to respond. But before I do that, I just want to go to your comment about promises we can't keep with money we don't have.
Oh, no.
Steve Gottwalt, who was the chair of this committee, used to say that. And when he was the chair, when we were implementing the Affordable Care Act, that was more than 10 years ago, and he was completely wrong. So we will go to Representative Bonner.
Well, history is not the only determinant of future behavior.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'll first start off with, you know, I think we share the frustration around the timeliness of fiscal notes. I think we all appreciate that. We all understand that. Everyone in this committee gets it. But that said, just all of that stuff we just discussed here completely ignores the A3, which we actually adopted earlier in this section. And while we did not have a fiscal note, and we are still waiting for that, we were working continually with the Department of Human Services to, as this bill was moving along, and having a conversation to understand where hidden costs might come from and relatively what that might look like. We were able to ascertain what some of those big pieces are, and the A3 addresses the lion's share of those issues. So I want to put that out there right out off the bat. The other thing, and you know, I'm actually going to ask for a roll call on this. And the reason is that, you know, for one, the whole point of healthcare is to deliver care. And what we're doing with prior authorization in many cases is denying care. We're putting unnecessary burdens in the path. And quite frankly, the goal of prior authorization was stated to reduce costs and to increase safety. Those are the points of having it. And those are admirable goals. But we have gone so far into abusing prior auth that we are now having providers doing 14 hours of minutia every week at every clinic just to do prior auth for things that are very targeted. This bill, everything in this bill, has about a 95% approval rate. What basically that says to me is a couple of things. Number one, that we are putting barriers to care and in creating additional cost and administration where it need not be. And we're doing it to the detriment of patients. And on top of that, we are really getting to this place where we are questioning providers, we are questioning their care. And if it's getting approved at 95%, that says to me that the doctors and the physicians know what they're doing. They are providing adequate care. They are making adequate recommendations. And I just want to be clear, 95% approval. In the 5% that remains, if we were to look at how much of that is folks who simply give up and don't pursue the care that they need, I suspect the number of that approval would be significantly higher. Everything in this bill is targeted. And by putting prior authorization in the pathway, what we are essentially doing here is delaying care and in some cases actually creating unsafe situations or life-threatening situations to specific patients. And so for those reasons, I would strongly recommend that we do not support this amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
All right, a roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Is there further discussion to the amendment? Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Najol, for bringing the amendment. This has been a significant concern all the way around, I would love to hear how this amendment actually takes care of those costs, because I have gone through the amendment, and I don't see how it solves the problem we have with a likely hundreds of millions of dollars of cost and certainly tens of millions. So maybe your amendment, I mean, I can see how you have saved some of that money, but we're talking going from hundreds of millions of dollars of cost to tens of millions of dollars of cost. Either way, there is a significant cost that's not accounted for here. That's not accounted for. And I think we need to push back on this idea. This is not a denial of care. We hear this a lot from the other side. You know, I mean, we hear this about, you know, people talk about access on certain things. Well, it's not about access. It's, you can get it anywhere. It's about who's going to make a buck off of it. That's what it's about. And in this case, prior authorization is not about access. It's not about denial of care. It is about ensuring that we are providing the best care, the most appropriate care, and that, frankly, sometimes, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I had somebody in my office recently saying that they got hit with a prior auth after they took on MA. So it was an MA program, state-run. That was when they got hit with prior auth. And it was because they had to figure out which insurance company was paying for it. There's this somehow this idea that everything is neat and tidy and clean and exactly as we'd want it to be. It's just not. It's just not. And it is reasonable to say, we got to figure this stuff out. It is reasonable to say, you know, this is out of line with what we typically see. We need to take a look at this and make sure that this is the right thing to do. That's what prior auth is about. It's about saying, this is not typical. Let's take a look and make sure this is the right thing. That is reasonable. Not only does it save costs, it also on occasion saves lives. And we should care about that. We should care about that. So let's not minimize this. This is a very complex issue that we want to turn into sound bites and talking points about everyone deserves the care and everyone deserves for this to be really easy and simple. They also deserve for it to be right. They also deserve for it to be right. And that's actually what this is about.
Further discussion? Representative Nadeau, did you raise your hand?
I was just going to be done if we're done.
Okay. Do you want to close up?
And thanks for the discussion again. And thank you, Representative Bonner. You know, these are just areas where, you know, where we can disagree and disagree, hopefully respectfully. You know, emergency services are already covered. So there's a lot of things that are already exempted. By going where you want to go, I mean, just, you know, Section 26 of the bill, and your A3 may have changed some of those things in there. There's just an enormous number of exemptions that are now there's not going to be a double check. This is like, you know, having one grocery store, you know, not being able to have, you know, that checks and balances in our system. The fact that, you know, we look at payers as your job is just to pay whatever we want, pay whatever we set. You know, we're going to balance all the things, and everybody just needs to pay. And that's what it is. There's no questions asked. And this isn't about, it can't only be about having access to every possible thing without there being that it's not the restriction, it's the realization that that economies have to come into play. And this bill is going to cost tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't know. And that's why we shouldn't vote for it today. Once we get the fiscal note, bring it in on the floor and put it in there. Do whatever. But we have no idea what this bill is going to cost Minnesotans. Zero. And I never say this. We got a ton of money last year, and we spent it on a bunch of stuff that, in my opinion, was not the priority. This, we could have done this, and we could have paid for it, and I'm not sure we can. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you. I appreciate it. I would still recommend that you vote yes on this.
All right. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
No.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
Akam, no.
Akam, no. Representative Backer. Backer excused. Representative Bonner.
Okay. Aye.
Bonner.
Or I'm sorry, no.
So close.
You got me so worked up, Representative Nadeau.
Okay. We're having a vote here.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
Carroll.
Representative Carroll.
Vote?
Yeah, hold them up. You got to hold them up to the screen. Oh,
I'm back. Right, one more time. Go again. Go again.
Representative Carroll.
Now?
Yep.
Carroll, no.
Carroll, no.
And Madam Chair, I'm back. This is
Representative Backer.
This is yours, right? Yeah, yes. Okay. I vote yes.
Backer, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Herr.
Herr, no.
Herr, no. Representative Keel.
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Yes.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Yes.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam, excused. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, no.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
No.
Smith, no. 7 ayes, 11 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So we will go now to the A18 amendment. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of the last discussion, I will just withdraw that amendment. Thank you very much.
All right. So the A18 is withdrawn. So that concludes the amendments that were filed on the bill. And with that, I think we can go to discussion on the bill as on the DE as amended. And so discussion to the DE as amended. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not usually the case on a bill coming out of committee and heading to Ways and Means, but I'm actually really curious to see how this bill ends up once we get to the floor, because I think we're going to have to see some pretty significant changes to it, because typically we don't send a bill to Ways and Means that is so out of balance. Obviously we had this lengthy discussion on prior auth. I think that one is probably the biggest change we're going to see, because again, even if some of the problems are fixed and it's not hundreds of millions of dollars, it's tens of millions of dollars. That's going to be significant. I look at, I don't believe we've seen a fiscal note on this either, on the impact of, you know, as we eliminate for-profit MCOs, There are currently 30,000 Minnesotans being served through MA because DHS chose to enter into a contract with a for-profit HMO. Because DHS actually found those contract terms to be agreeable. And DHS decided that that for-profit HMO was just as capable of providing good care to Minnesotans as any of the non-for-profit HMOs. But to think that there is not going to be a cost to the state of redetermining those 30,000 people and moving them to a different insurance plan, that's just not how it works. As we know around here, there's a cost to everything. So it'll be interesting to see if we bother to make sure that we've got the fiscal data on that before moving forward with that. You know, I also think about these insurance mandates, and I wish we would have seen, Representative Tabke actually had a good bill to apply that defrayal to everyone. Because right now, one thing we haven't really discussed is the fact that the state's going to be on the hook for the defrayal of all these insurance mandates. And just one of them alone, the cost of the state's going to be around $8 million. However, that defrayal only applies to a very, very small number of plans that are purchased through the exchange. That does not apply to all of the employer-based plans. Frankly, the vast majority of the fully insured market, that defrayal does not apply to. So one thing we haven't talked about in all of that is the cost to every Minnesotan in increased premiums. Because when you add six insurance mandates, and again, the best information we have is, there's $8 million of defrayal just on one of those mandates. And that only applies to a very small portion of those who are insured. The vast majority are going to have to pay this in increased premiums times six different mandates. That is significant. While at the same time, we've wiped out in this bill our healthcare access fund. We have wiped out the mechanism that we have had to pay for reinsurance, which has actually proven to lower the cost of healthcare for folks in Minnesota. Proven. While at the same time, every single proposal we have heard in this committee wildly increases the cost of healthcare. We couldn't even get to an actual public option plan. And even without an actual public option plan, hundreds of millions of dollars in cost increase, likely in the ranks of billions of dollars. And we have now wiped out the mechanism that actually has significantly decreased the cost of healthcare in the state of Minnesota. That feels quite backwards. There's very little that I can get excited about here. Again, on the mental health piece, our critical access mental health providers are seeing a major cut coming. And again, this isn't just any mental health provider. These are our critical access mental health providers. And we're not fixing that. And yet, we're spending, in fact, I don't remember where my notes are, that the all funds, we came up with an awful lot of money to spend outside of the relatively small target that was given. And yet, it's not going to those critical access mental health providers who really need it. That's going to be a problem. We already know we have a problem with that. We have just exacerbated that problem. So there's not a lot to be excited about. One, I don't think we know what this bill looks like when it comes to the floor because of all the costs that are not yet accounted for. So it's hard to say too much about this bill. But what we can say is that this bill increases the cost of health care for everyone in the state of Minnesota. And that's going to be a really tough pill to swallow on top of all of the other
tax increases, mandates, et cetera, that have been placed on Minnesota families over the last year with the current budget that we are living under. This is going to be a real tough pill to swallow, and it's going to be hard for Minnesota families to assume an even more expensive landscape for health care. So I certainly will be voting no on this. And in fact, Madam Chair, I would are we at this point, are we still adopting the DE? Are we on final passage? So either way.
This is on the DE.
So I guess I would request a roll call on final passage to Ways and Means. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the committee, first, I want to thank you for adopting the A1 amendment. I think that will probably not carry the day with the entire overall vote, but still appreciate the committee's consideration on that. I don't want that to sway anybody who was maybe thinking of voting no and now is going to vote yes for that. I do want to thank the chair for her hard work on this. I know that there was a lot of work and then a lot of extra work that went into this particular bill and what was done there, and for working within the capacity that the committee could on the mental health and the pharmacy pieces for that, so that there is some good that's coming from that. I do continue to have concerns, as I do with every bill that comes forward, with the disruptions to the insurance marketplace, and I do continue to believe that more mandates do create higher premiums, and when we are looking at things like eliminating the for-profit MCOs, that gives people fewer options to work with. And we know that we have disruptions coming with the reinsurance and with whatever the feds do with their tax credits for insurance premiums. And I think we're looking at the next 5 years as being very disruptive to the health insurance marketplace, which we've lived through before, and it's not comfortable or easy for us to do, and I think this contributes to that. The same thing with the changes that are made to prior authorization, especially when we just don't know what the numbers and what the impact of that will end up being. And the final point is just to that on the process overall and what the spreadsheet looks like. I'm confident that this is not how the committee would like to bring this forward, but I understand that that's a situation we're in, and we have a deadline that has to be met today. So we'll look forward to that in the Ways and Means Committee, and I would just ask members to vote no.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to say thank you for the work that you've done on the bill, particularly in the mental health area, and for the involvement that you've had from the human services policy side. I very much appreciate what you've been able to do with the limited dollars and the fact that we'll be able to continue the discussions going forward. I know that right now we don't have final decisions, and this is something that will be a process as we move throughout the negotiations and eventually to the conference committee. So I'm looking forward to that and looking forward to keeping all options out, that even though we may have voted down one today, that does not mean that is ruled out. We'll continue those discussions. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for pulling this whole committee together and working with us all over the course of the session. I think we've done some excellent work. I'm proud of the features in the bill that relate to making the health system work better for both patients and providers. So many of the things that we have passed and that we've talked about today with prior authorization are causing moral hazard to providers, causing burnout to providers. They need us to be thinking about them and what it takes to be able to give the care to Minnesotans that Minnesotans deserve. So I'm proud of those aspects of the bill, as well as the mandates that we've talked about that are actually delivering the care people need to the people who need it. And I will speak both to the orthotics and as well as gender affirming and reproductive care. I think those things are very important to Minnesotans. I am proud to be supporting them, and I'm glad they're in our bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to thank you for always being so open, and I appreciate the work that you have done to put this bill together. There's a lot in here, and some of it I think is great, and some of it I obviously have some challenges with, and I don't envy the discussions going forward and trying to find those things. And I thank Representative Fisher for acknowledging that we do have some challenges, and that as we move forward, we'll continue to work on those. I just want to, and maybe this is a kind of a dead horse. We talk a lot about patients and providers, and we're all that is vital. But the other leg of that stool is our payers. That's the other leg, and they're an important leg. I always get in trouble when I talk about healthcare being about money. But it is. There's a lot of money in healthcare. And I think every one of us here are trying to drive those costs down, increase access, increase rates. We're almost in this world where it's almost impossible. But I have appreciated the respectful discussions that we've had. I know that you guys didn't vote for any of my amendments, but I still appreciate the discussions and the relationships that I feel like I can move forward and try to push and bring another side, and I've appreciated that. So as we move forward, I thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and ditto with what Representative Nadeau said. We do appreciate you, Chair, with all that you have to do. Of course, though, at the end of the day, very concerned about the mandates. We have seen in EMS what happens when we get into more of a government-centered care. As several of you have heard, is when we get into a system in which 70% of the payees are dependent on a government Medicaid or Medicare, we are seeing in the EMS world problems with retention, reimbursements, and recruitment. And that is really the concern that I am concerned about here in greater Minnesota. You know, with our critical access hospitals, we are not thriving in greater Minnesota. Right now, as a ambulance EMT, my closest hospital is 20 miles away, and that's in South Dakota. My two closest Minnesota hospitals are 25 and 23 miles, and then I go down to Ortonville, which is about 30. And so, like last week on my ambulance run, when we got there, we are becoming part of the ER staff because they had another run that came in. And so my concern is when we put more mandates, we take away the private insurance, and we focus more of a government program, removing the nonprofits, HMOs, and so forth, we are driving to, in my opinion, racing to the same type of crisis that we are seeing in EMS. So those are my concerns with the mandates. Of course, in my neck of the woods, I have a lot of small business owners, and we know what has happened with health care insurance since I've been here in 2014, because of Minnesota used to do it right, in my opinion. We were the star of the country with how we were delivering health insurance, low premiums. People were getting assistance. We even had a mechanism to help people with pre-existing condition. And then we had the Affordable Care Act, which is, in my opinion, oxymoron, come out and cause additional challenges, which has ran into EMS. And I'm really concerned that our healthcare system with our hospitals, especially critical access hospitals, will do the same. And this bill, in my opinion, we have to grab the DFIB. I'm a concern in the next year with how we perform health care here in Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for members. It's been an honor serving with everybody this year.
Thank you. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this session. Thank you, members, for all the discussion. I would just like to call out appreciation for the rapid whole genome sequencing as well as the amino acid formula requirements. As we go through healthcare and we continue to have our eye toward the future, our healthcare is going to become more personalized, more individualized as we continue to learn more and more and more about the human genome. And also, I want to say thank you to covering the hair prosthetics as well, because that is a result of treatment due to something happening at the genetic and molecular level. So I think this is a really good primer for where the future of healthcare is going. So I would look forward to those discussions, and thanks again.
All right, thank you. And just a reminder, members, we're still on the DE2. So, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the DE2, there's a lot of really good things in there, and Amanda has mentioned a few of those. And I think as we further reflect and study and continue to the work on that and get to the floor, we're going to have a lot of great things to talk about at the very end. I just want to say a few thank yous to the members of this committee. You don't have to sign up for this committee. It's a difficult, hard committee, and everybody who signs up and works year after year on this on both sides of the aisle, you really put your heart into it, and I just want to say thank you for all the work that you do. I see it on both sides of the aisle. I see the conversations, hear them, and we have them in here and out in the building, and I think everybody is really dedicated to the cause of improving the health care for their constituents and the people in the state of Minnesota. I also want to just say thank you to so many of the people out in the audience today who are also dedicated to the work they do in their careers and professions. And one of those things that they have to do is help educate us on a lot of these issues, because a lot of us don't start with the knowledge base you all bring into the room. So I just want to acknowledge the people who come to these meetings, listen, and then have more to talk about with us as we move forward trying to improve healthcare in Minnesota. And finally, Chair Liebling, this is a huge lift, and you do such a great job with managing the committee, managing the priorities. We will never have enough money to deal with all the problems out there. And so you do all this work. We do some great work. We solve some problems for some people, but there's always more to do. And so we kind of walk away with an unsatisfied feeling in a lot of ways every year, but we just need to keep at it, because there are structural things we need to do to our healthcare system to improve it, to make it work, and we're not there yet. We all know that. And so just to thank you for everybody who's so committed, and staff right here at the table as well. They are irreplaceable for what we need, and they come out and they work tirelessly. So thank you for that. And look forward to getting the bill to the floor, to having some more discussions and wins for the people of Minnesota and their health care.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bierman. So I'm going to make just a few comments, and then I'm going to renew my motion on the DE2. So, you know, just a couple of things I heard I want to respond to. This bill is not out of balance. I mean, we keep hearing that, and I also heard a comment, oh, this is the most out of balance bill or something like that, and I just, you know, if you will indulge me for a second, I've been here a long time. I've been on this committee a long time, or previous iterations of this committee. And I recall when we had a certain chair who is now over in the Senate, a Republican chair, and I must tell you, we've had some pretty fictitious budgets come out of this committee. And and Representative Fisher remembers as well. Budgets that were so fictitious that the fiscal staff had asterisks all over the spreadsheet saying, we're not supporting this line, things like that. And I have to tell you, I recall having a certain amendment in this committee that I had some brilliant staff member gave me the idea, but the amendment said, the Commissioner of Human Services shall purchase a lottery ticket and we will book $2 million. That was how fictitious the budgets were that have come out of this committee. This is not a fictitious budget. It is not as complete as we would like, but it is not out of balance. Also, there's not an $8 million defrayal here. There's an $8 million cost payment appropriation for mostly for, I think, for the Department of Human Services for coverage of orthotics and prosthetics, which I think we ought to be paying for, because if people don't have those things, that's a real problem. And they're on our public programs. By definition, they're low income. And if you are missing a limb and you need that to be functional and to be productive, by golly, in my book, you ought to have it. So, and I think that many of us would agree with that. So there's that. I also do want to respond to the issue about the nonprofit HMOs. You know, that was the law in Minnesota until pretty recently. We had only nonprofit HMOs. The Republicans changed that when they were in charge, allowing for-profit HMOs into our programs. There was no fiscal note at that time. And I may be wrong, but I think Representative Ryer's legislation has kind of a runway so that this isn't going to happen right away. So this argument that there's a lot of cost here is not accurate. I would just say also, finally, to me, healthcare is not about money. I mean, that's a problem, that it's about money in this country. It should not be about money. Healthcare should be about people and their needs. People need healthcare, and they should, in my view, they should get the healthcare they need with minimal barriers. And at the very time that people are sick and needing healthcare is the very last moment they should have to worry about the bills and whether something is authorized and whether they're going to be able to afford what they need to have. So, you know, maybe it's kind of, maybe it's a little bit saying the quiet part out loud, saying that healthcare is about money, Representative Nadeau, but I don't accept that. I mean, that's like an unfortunate reality of the current system that we have in this country, which is a very broken system, and I probably don't need to repeat here, because Mr. Schaefer did it very well for me, that really health insurance should not exist, and or it should be a very minor part of the system. This is a very broken way to supply health care and to mediate who gets it and to figure out who pays for it. So my goal remains, you know, I don't expect to achieve it anytime soon, but you know, we should be moving away from that really broken, wasteful system. And that's what the prior authorization reforms really put a spotlight on how terribly wasteful our system really is, not just for, you know, the patients, but also for the providers who are wasting their time trying to get approval for things that they ought to be able to approve because they're medically needed. So, with that, I'm going to renew my motion to adopt the DE2 amendment as amended. And I don't think there's a roll call on that. Am I correct? We'll have a roll call on the bill as amended. So with that, all in favor of adoption of the DE2 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the DE2 is amended and is adopted. Sorry. And, okay, so now we are back on the bill, which is the House File 4571 as amended. Is there any further discussion on House File 4571? I'm going to have to remember that number. Whew. 4571 as amended. All right, not seeing any. So with that, the clerk will take the roll, and the chair, of course, votes aye. Oh, should we clarify the motion? Oh, yes, I will repeat the motion, sorry. So the motion is that House File 4571, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means, correct? Okay, the clerk will take the roll, the chair votes aye.
Chair Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Bierman. Bierman, aye. Lee Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Backer.
No.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Bonner, aye. Representative Carroll. Representative
Carroll. Carroll votes aye.
Carroll, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Aye.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye. Representative Herr.
Herr, aye.
Herr, aye. Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Nadeau, no. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Quam, excused. Representative Breyer.
Aye.
Breyer, aye. Representative Smith.
Smith, aye.
Smith, aye.
11 ayes and 7 nays. There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. So now that we have completed our business, I would like to make my little speech and thank people, because it really has been, I really have enjoyed this committee this year, and really am so appreciative of everyone. You know, everyone here knows that this is completely a group effort, that nothing you ever do in the legislature is you do by yourself. And that includes the people who oppose you on issues who also help to make things better and improve the bill. And I especially, of course, want to, so I want to thank all of the members, both the minority and the majority members, for all of your hard work. You know, it's really been a pleasure working with everyone. Especially I want to call out my vice chair, Representative Bierman, who's just a pleasure to work with and just great and fills in and is just right there with all the time for all of us. And Representative Schumacher, who is the lead on this committee, and we've worked together for a long time, and just really appreciate, and you can see in his comments that he understands, having been in this chair, he knows how it works and understands some of the complexities and is always, of course, not always in agreement, but very good to work with always. I would like to, of course, thank the staff. And I know the nonpartisan staff get mentioned all the time, but truly they make this place run. And they work very hard and on a schedule that probably most of us would just say is impossible. So, you know, I just want to mention Sarah Sunderman, Elizabeth Clarkvist, Randy Chun, and Joe Harney, who's our fiscal staff, who are just amazing. And thank you all so very much for your hard work. And, of course, they're not done. It's not like we're dismissing them and they get to go on vacation. But, you know, this is that moment where everything shifts. Of course, I also want to thank our partisan staff. So we have Jonathan Cotter, right? I got that right, right? Yes, Cotter. I don't hear your last name too much, so I hear your first name all the time. And Joe Durheim, and they are, you know, probably the public doesn't see their work so much, but they help us understand what we're doing, keep us on track, and are just very valuable to all of us. And I know that they have a good working relationship among themselves, which I think is, we can all appreciate that very much. Also, of course, Krista Niedernhofer, who's our committee legislative assistant. Again, you know, most people probably don't really appreciate how much work she does. All the copying, all the, you know, it's just an amazing array of work that she's doing for the entire committee and for the public. So we appreciate that so much. She's been with me a long time, and she is one of the most knowledgeable people in this place, I have to tell you. And of course, Josh Zandi, who's been our committee administrator and has just amazingly grown into this role and is just very wise and very knowledgeable and very capable person. Really appreciate all of his work. And then our page, Natalie, who is back there and has also been helping us this session, and really appreciate your help, Natalie. And Krista, really depends on the help she receives, because there's a lot of paper that's flying around all the time here. Less than we had, but still a lot of paper. Maybe we can still figure out how to reduce that further. So I think I remembered everybody. It's been really an absolute pleasure, and I also look forward to going on to the next steps. Oh, I also do want to acknowledge, and thank you, Mr. Sandy, I also want to acknowledge the Sergeant's Office. This has been a very, we've had some you know, big crowds in here, and the sergeant's office has been just wonderful in arranging everything, always being there for us, helping us be safe and manage crowds and all of that. Really appreciate their work. So with that, members, unless there's any further business, so we will, this is our last hearing for the year, and there's always possible we could come back to do some kind of special thing, but barring that, I think we'll be giving you your time slots back from here on, and
yeah, we'll be on the House floor.
And we'll see you on the House floor. Right. So with that, we are adjourned.